And moving into our make or break corner, a new corner for this season, thought would be interesting to, especially with Brancas. I think you came to the region 2015, 2016. So it's been a while since you've had that exploration into open finance and really started Brancas. So maybe you can share with our audience what has been the biggest make or break moment for Brancas so far, and what have you learned from that?
I think there are two things. One is relying more on partners to access kind of large deals and more complex deals, particularly working with banks. These are large risk-averse institutions. They're not usually shopping for a particular technology tool. They're usually looking for a bundle of solutions that are solving a big problem at their scale, right? And call it naivete, call it arrogance, or just optimism. But I think realizing that working with partners, local technology partners, where together we can offer a bundle, has been really valuable and is actually much more efficient in onboarding bank partners. So that's been really a useful make or break moment. I think the other one is acknowledging that not all bank leaders are believers yet. And in fact, there's I can think of, and in being at peace with that and recognizing that it's okay, not everybody's on board yet, but finding the bank executives that are believers and want to make a big bet on digital or on embedded finance, those are the ones where you're going to be able to really have some wins together, right? You know, and so there are some traditional banks, maybe they're primarily focused on serving corporate needs, and they're just saying, look, like digital or embedded finance, this is not our DNA today, right? And maybe we're being too slow, but this is a choice we're making because we rely on our relationship managers and the rapport that we have with our corporate customers. And we're going to focus on that. And if we need to offer higher quality consumer digital products later, then we can catch up. You can argue whether or not that's the right approach. But regardless, I think we need to find what we've learned as a make or break moment is finding the banks and the leadership teams within the banks that have already said, yes, we want to be competitive as a digital financial institution, and that we want to partner with tech companies to do more as a bank. That's really a key one. And acknowledging that it's not going to be the whole industry. It's going to be these executives that are really motivated to work with someone like Brancas.
Yeah, I can imagine it must be really challenging to balance a marketplace where on one hand you have a lot more like faster moving, leaner players like startups, and the other you're working with very large institutions like banks. I wanted to go into another corner of ours, a new corner for the season, where you can share a little bit of, since we've had the privilege of joining Brancas on this journey since late 2021, early 2022, maybe share a little bit of what that experience has been like working with an investor like us and how that has contributed in any way to Brancas as a company.
Yeah, so Insignia led our Series B fundraise in 2021, 2022, and Insignia has been a tremendous partner, not just Yingluan Tan, but also the whole crew, whether it's you, Paolo, and supporting us on public affairs kind of initiatives, or whether it's the legal team or the operations team and portfolio management team. I think what's cool about Insignia is, number one, this is a really talented group of people that know how to work with startups and see the patterns from other startups. Number two, just the connectivity. The Insignia team is just connected globally, not just within fintech, but across industries. And so the introductions and the partnerships that have come out of those introductions have been just really valuable. And then third is just its ambitiousness, ambition and ambitiousness. So what I appreciate about the Insignia team is they're pushing us to be as visionary as possible and think, what will it take for Brancas to have impact globally? And what do we need to do between now and getting to that scale? So it's been a great experience so far with Insignia, and I'm just really impressed by the team and support.
Yeah, and thanks for also, at least on my end, being very game to share, have these conversations on the podcast. And it's been very helpful to also even just educate our audience in open finance as well, and let the world know what Brancas is doing. And speaking of widening horizons and really thinking about what kind of global impact Brancas can have, I did want to talk about the Middle East as well. And recently you guys also released a MENA report. Maybe you can share a little bit of the takeaways. We'll include a link for people to check out the report, but maybe tidbits and maybe a sort of a motivation why you guys decided to explore this region in particular.
So the Middle East region, and particularly the Gulf countries, it's a fascinating place for financial services and for open finance in particular. Number one, it has completely transformed in the last, let's say, 3 years because of the government authorities mandating very quickly open banking requirements of banks. And this is very different from Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia, you don't really have complete kind of end-to-end open banking regulations in any market. It's piecemeal. Indonesia has pretty good and comprehensive payments regulations. Philippines is strong on data protection and consented data sharing. But there really isn't one market in Southeast Asia that has a comprehensive open banking regulatory framework in place. By contrast, in the Middle East, this has come really has come top down very quickly. And that is combined with an overall vision in places like Saudi Arabia, UAE, Qatar, and Bahrain, where they are pushing hard to diversify away from typical income sources, particularly oil and gas, right? Saudi Arabia is the biggest and best example of this, but it's really a region-wide phenomenon where all of these governments are quite forward-thinking about their economic development plans and saying, look, we cannot continue to rely on commodities, wealth, and they're actually competing among each other. I think it's an underappreciated aspect in the Gulf is that there's healthy economic competition even between Dubai and Abu Dhabi within the UAE, but also between the UAE and Saudi Arabia and Bahrain and Qatar and even Kuwait, that are competing to be the Middle East hubs for different new knowledge industries, whether it's financial services or crypto or trading or even things like sustainability and green tech. Anyway, so why are we interested in the Middle East? Because all of a sudden, the entire industry, whether it's banks, digital banks, and non-bank lenders and startups that are serving financial services, are all very quickly adapting and frankly needing new technology to support open finance. Brancas has contacted very frequently, including actually as recently as this week, by Middle East banks that have heard about Brancas saying, hey, we're looking for a technology partner to help us build out our open finance capabilities. We heard about you because we saw this report, or we heard about you on the Insignia podcast, and we're looking for some advice and maybe a technology solution to support our open finance roadmap because we have to do it. The regulator, the central bank, or the fintech regulator requires it, but we want to look also beyond the compliance to say, how do we, the bank or the financial institution, how do we build kind of monetized commercial products on top of whatever we need to do for compliance? So we've been listening to the market. There's a lot of demand and a lot of knowledge gaps, but eagerness to learn and eagerness to partner in this region. And so in early 2023, we set up a small team and some capabilities and onboarded our first clients and partners. And it's been really successful so far.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the sort of the challenges that you face here in Southeast Asia have already been in some ways solved in a way in the Gulf region because it's very top down, as you did mention. So has the transition been a lot easier than you expected? Were there any advantages because Branka started out in Southeast Asia expanding into the Gulf Coast markets?
It's not been easier. It's easier in certain ways, but it's harder in others, as you can imagine. It's easier because the demand is actually there already, because a lot of institutions have to do this for compliance reasons. They don't have a local partner available. And so their willingness to bring in Brancas and for us to support their journey is very high. But it's harder. Look, this is a different market. This is a market that's used to working with local people that they trust. And Brancas does not have a history of working in the Middle East, right? We're just now building our team out there. And so, just like in Southeast Asia, local relationships are really important and building that trust with local decision makers. And that takes time. That's even if there's demand from a macro and industry point of view, it doesn't replace the relationships that we need to build locally. And so we're putting a lot of effort and thoughtfulness into building that trust on the ground in the markets where we operate in the Middle East.
Conversely, have there been any sort of synergies from the Middle East going into Southeast Asia so far in the time that you've spent there?
Yeah, it's a good question. The Middle East is a much, there's a lot more wealth in the Middle East. And so the financial institutions and the tech companies are able to make large bets on new technologies and experimental products. I think there's a lot of learnings around cross-border payments, cross-border trade, and actually migrant worker solutions, because as in the Gulf, usually more than half the population are overseas workers in that country, right? So non-citizen expats, everything from construction workers and hospitality, and even members of government civil service. And kind of migrant worker, blue collar or white collar, migrant worker solutions is an area that's core to the labor economy in the Middle East. And I think there's that's the an additional data point on financial services for expats.
Yeah, and that actually just shows that there's probably a stronger relationship between MENA and Southeast Asia than meets the eye. And before we wrap up, I did want to ask about AI as well. I feel like this is like a recurring
Sure.
question for everybody
Yeah.
these days. How is AI playing a role in open finance or even Branka's own growth as a platform?
Yeah, I don't have a sexy answer for fintech and open finance because we're really just building version one for
Right,
these
right,
FIs.
right.
It's a brand new industry. I will say for Brancas, though, and really any software company, there the speed at which programming tools powered by AI and productivity for our software engineers and our QA quality assurance testers and really for our technical staff, that is where we found usefulness. We've been experimenting with a few different Copilot type tools for our engineering staff, just so they have faster, basically faster programming and debugging and testing. And so that is where we've seen the benefit of AI in our operations are really for internal tooling that gives superpowers to our technical staff.
Any advice in terms of implementing AI technologies, especially third-party ones, within your organization?
Yeah, I just experiment. This is all brand new, right? Experiment, be thoughtful about what you experiment, but then give it kind of a start and end date with clear expectations. Try out a few different tools. I'm trying to do it myself with things like presentation. There's a lot of like presentation materials where you can create slide decks and visual aids for presentations using AI. Some of them are not that interesting. It's basically a kind of a just a faster way to create images, but it's getting better and better almost by the month. But then there's also, I'll say the other piece of advice I have is there was a CTO I was talking with, a different industry, but the way he described AI tooling is there's a new skill set in prompt engineering, right? Which is another way of saying it's a new skill set to learn how to talk to AI programs to get what you want, right? And I think all of us have, probably all of us listening have dabbled with ChatGPT at this point. And you experience it a bit with ChatGPT, right? Learning how to write your messages in a way that you get the answers you want. And it's not as simple as just writing down into the chat box the idea that's in your head. You have to be thoughtful about what is the output that you want the machine to provide back to you. And learning how to be a prompt engineer is actually useful, whether or not you're writing software or just using ChatGPT to help with a document.
Yeah, I think definitely a very lucrative job, even if under the radar at the moment. Yeah, and going into our rapid fire round corner and some new questions from the last time you were on the show. First up, what superpower of any one of your fellow C-level colleagues would you want to have?
I think this is a great question because I have such an amazing leadership team. I feel very fortunate that we've been able to put this team together. What I am so impressed and admiring of my senior colleagues is they just have a great eye at spotting junior talent that's really high potential, right? This could be an intern that's still in university. This could be a new college grad. This could be someone with 2, 3, 4 years of experience, and they're really not an expert in anything, but it's a mix of attitude, raw intelligence, creative thinking skills, just hustle, and like the ability to and the willingness to put in work. And a lot of people in interviews can say the right things that indicate those, right? But I think whether it's JX, our CFO, or whether it's Mike, our COO, or Ken, our CTO, I think they have a great ability at spotting what we call green talent, right? So they're still green, kind of early days, but you can tell that they have the right combination of kind of raw ingredients and attitude to be very successful. And they also have the drive, right? The drive to be professionally building that skill set, right? And so I think that's really something I admire and I'm trying to learn from.
Yeah, now I'm curious what questions they ask in interviews. If you were being invited to produce a Netflix series, what would be the title of the show and maybe like a one-liner?
It would be Never Give Up. So I guess it could be a few different genres. A bit cliche, but look, what I think people that have not been a founder do not realize is how often you're getting no, right? You're getting doubtful kind of responses, whether it's from family, friends, would-be investors, would-be customers, would-be employees. And so it requires this kind of stubbornness, willing to take the data inputs, but stubbornness to never give up and keep pushing, willingness to pivot, but not giving up, even when you're faced with 9 out of 10 responses being doubters of one sort or another.
Yeah, I guess a title for that could be 9 out of 10 and just be a series of
there you go.
rejections. Yeah, looking back now, what is a skill, soft skill or hard skill you should have learned back in your time as a student?
Yeah, for me, this one's super clear. It's taking a moment to breathe when emotions are high. And those could be frustration emotion. It can be stress or exhaustion emotion. It can just be like a feeling of overwhelmed, right? It's a very up and down experience as a founder and in the startup world. And taking a moment to not act based on an intense emotion in the moment and taking a moment. And that moment could be overnight, sleeping on it, which is super valuable, or it could just be literally a moment and some breaths. But I think that's so valuable. There's a term called amygdala hijacking, which is your amygdala is like the non-human, it's the animal brain. That like lower on the evolution tree. And that animal brain it's also known as the fight or flight response, right? But that's really, it takes you back away from being a human to being an animal and kind of having animal-like responses. And I don't want to pretend to be a neurologist here, but it's real. And I think all of us can feel it when emotions are high, the rational, kind of thoughtful, empathetic side of one's brain sometimes turns off temporarily. And taking a moment and take you back to the real world.
Yeah, I think definitely not talked about as often, but yeah, important skill to have. Definitely hard to, it can be hard to train. It might take a whole lifetime to actually get right. If there's something you could automate in your job just by wishing for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, what aspect of your role would that be?
Yeah, it'd be something around instant note-taking or instant to-do list. I try to keep a notebook with me at all times. It's even better than a phone, kind of physically writing it down. But the thing is, as a founder, you're thinking about 10 different functions. You're thinking short-term things that need to be addressed today, like firefighting, but also longer-term and strategy. And just keeping that kind of, if I could have a wire in my brain to dynamically update a to-do list, that would be really useful. So something like that.
Apple's Vision Pro has something to that effect. If you
yeah, yeah, it's crazy, by the way. Have you seen that the Vision Pro, you can type by moving your eyeballs? So we're getting there. you can get that. You get the keyboard comes up and you look at the keys. And as fast as you can look at the keys, it'll type for you.
Yeah.
So that's where we are. But so on the path to my instant brain link note-taking.
If you could pick anyone alive or dead to be your 24/7 executive coach, who would it be? And what would you want to learn from that coach?
Yeah, the one that comes to mind actually is pro athletes. This is a bit of a bro response, but look, to be a pro athlete, you have to have such mental dedication to improving yourself little by little every single day. I think there's too much of a stereotype that professional athletes got to where they are because they have some magic DNA, right? And I think they, yes, like Pro basketball players, like, they're very tall. That's DNA, right? They have great
Right.
muscle recovery and heart efficiency, right? That's great, right? But they're also taking tens of thousands of practice shots in their career. They're in the gym in the off season. And so the reason why I think a pro athlete I would love to have as a coach, right? Not just for the physical training, but for the mental persistence to just get your butt to the gym or to the office and put in the work and improve yourself little by little. And it's not always going to be fun, but the fulfillment that comes from building expertise, I think having a professional athlete would be a great learning for a non-athletic job like a tech founder.
Yeah, and you have an exercise partner as well.
Correct. Yeah, and they can get out of the office and sweat a little bit as part of the coaching. That's right.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so on that note, thanks so much for coming back on the show, Todd. It's definitely been years for Brancas and opened up a lot of new opportunities, whether it's in the Middle East or the developments that are happening in Indonesia and the Philippines. If our audience out there is interested in learning more about Brancas, they are pretty active in the event routes. I think you guys will be in Money 2020 this coming April.
That's right.
So do check them out. Anything else you wanted to plug, Todd, before we wrap up?
No, thank you very much for the questions, Paolo. If anyone listening is interested to talk more about banking as a service, embedded finance, some ideas on products you'd like to use or launch related to this category, would be happy to chat or share some materials.
Right, Maraming salamat, Todd. And
Thank you,
hope to have
Paul.
you around the next time you guys have a new milestone to share.
All right, wonderful. Take care, Paolo. Thank you.
Take care. Thanks.